Welcome back to Cargumentative, a podcast where four men gorging themselves on uplifting carbs talk to you about cars and all things automotive. I'm your host, Thomas Faulkner from the Sunday Times, and as usual, I'm joined by
Mark Paluta,
Mike Salomon,
and Ravid.
Guys, it's super to have you guys back here. It's been, 6 months? Feels like.
It was last week, Thomas.
No, man. I mean, you know, just in general. Feels like we've been together in this studio for like 6 months.
But we have.
We reached a milestone last week, didn't we? It was 20?
No, that was 2 weeks ago.
Oh. Really, eh?
Yeah.
Ah, so we're forging well into the big
numbers. How many episodes have we done?
This is number 22.
What? It's an established podcast.
It is an established podcast.
That's incredible.
Exactly. I mean, we're up in the 400s. We've not.
We don't take ourselves seriously at all.
No, 400 in the rankings.
Oh.
But, you know, it's fine. We enjoy it.
We have about 12 listeners.
We have a good laugh.
Yeah, we do.
And that's all that matters.
We do this for our own entertainment.
My mom told me today that she can only get through the first 20 minutes.
Really?
So if my mom can't listen to us, then...
She's
not a car person, though.
She's not.
I still haven't had a family member listen to it. And I'm talking about quite extended family.
Really? News, guys, because that's what we start the show off with.
Yes.
Here's a car for Mike. Mike likes these kind of things. Aston Martin DBS Superleggera Volante.
Oh, the convertible.
Yeah, that was shown
earlier
this week. Do you like it?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. It's the fastest Volante in the Mark's history. Did you know that?
Really, yeah? How fast?
340 k's an hour.
Sure.
533 kilowatt V12.
Sure.
Your kind of vibe?
Yeah, except for the fact that it's a Merc engine once again.
The V12, isn't it?
Sorry, you're right. Sorry, you're 100% right. True. Sorry, I was thinking about the normal Vantage.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
It's a good car. Superleggera is like the DB9, but the DB11.
Is it good looking?
11,
DB11.
But it's got a better looking grille, more power.
Let's just get a little flashback here. I don't know.
It's a lovely looking thing.
If you squint, it could be a white Bullet Mustang.
You'd have to be properly squinted.
No, I don't think so.
but I will say this, I prefer the coupe, and the coupe of that Superleggera is gorgeous.
These are really good looking cars.
They really are. Aston's got their eye on the ball, I think.
I don't know. I don't think they're as kind of relevant and as amazing as they were back in the
2000s. They haven't shown any pictures from the back.
It's just me.
I'd love to see the back.
I think I saw it. It looks similar to the
Bullet Mustang. As this is argumentative, we can't get by without mentioning the P word.
Oh, really? Are we going to do it?
Yeah, we are.
We have to.
Okay, I'm ready.
So Porsche has confirmed, I think it was on Tuesday, that's not yesterday, the day before, that Boxster and Cayman are going to be fully electric by 2022.
Fully electric?
Fully electric. And they are working on a hybrid version as well, but there will be a fully electric Cayman.
No, are they saying it'll be exclusively fully electric, or there will be a version?
There will be a fully electric version, and they are working on a hybrid as well.
Yeah. So, in other words, internal combustion hybrid and electric. Options.
Well, does that mean they'll get rid of that four-cylinder motor?
Hopefully.
Well, fantastic.
Yep. Yeah, it means they'll get
good job, Porsche.
It means they'll get like a. You see,
have you driven that four-cylinder?
Yes, I have.
And
it's very fast.
It sounds very awful.
But it doesn't sound great.
I don't know. There's something interesting about the sound.
No, it's not. Subaru can make a four-cylinder Boxster. No. Subaru makes a four-cylinder Boxster sound awesome. This thing sounds like it's this gravelly, you know. It sounds like early Gran Turismo trying to make a Subaru sound like a Subaru.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Okay.
No, and I think the sales actually, if I'm not mistaken, the sales actually demonstrate there's been a
a flop.
They're not selling very well in the US market, particularly, which is a big market for them.
There's been a distinctive move away from roadsters. I mean, Z4s and things like that.
Guys are complaining about the fuel consumption. They're saying that the four cylinder is not delivering like it should do.
Well, but that's true for the downsized turbos. We know that if you start pushing them, then you lose those amazing fuel consumption figures that they get in the testing labs.
That's why people like me have to write this in the paper.
Yeah.
I wonder if one of those flat four engines would fit in my bus.
It would.
It would.
Then you can try revving that to 11.
Yeah, let's see how that goes.
See how many rods you can put through the block.
Oh. The bus will rise again,
Germany's Corolla, the Golf.
Germany's Corolla. That's so much more than that.
It's so much not more than that.
It absolutely is.
It's the most boring car in the world. The Golf 8.
It's the perfect car. Well, so I don't know about the Golf 8, but the Golf 7 is the perfect car.
So is a new Corolla hatch. But we could debate this ad nauseum. But anyway, Golf 8, spy picture art on the internet.
It looks very similar
basically
to
Basically kind of sans camouflage. Mm. It's a little bit of stuff around the headlights. I don't know. Looks like a Golf 7.5.
Yeah, it'll bring a bit more tech, I'm sure.
Yeah, it will have tech.
No, I think they've changed a little bit of the look. It's distinctive. It's a distinctive Golf, but it does have a little bit more of that Arteon nose. And the Arteon's a good-looking car.
I think it's got more of the Polo nose, unfortunately.
Also a good-looking car.
No, not the new one.
I think so.
I think they took a step back.
It'll be a great seller. It'll come with all the bells. It'll be priced right. It'll be incredibly reliable.
Will it?
Yeah, absolutely. They're perfect. They're great cars. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never owned a better car.
The most problematic car I've ever owned was a Golf.
Is it an all-new platform?
Yeah, but Tom...
It's MQB, so, you know.
So it's basically the platform for everything, including the new R8.
Everything.
Yeah, but, okay, with that platform, let's just explain to everyone.
It's modular, so you can adapt it.
You can adapt, you can extend the wheelbase, shorten the wheelbase.
It's like a Lego chassis where you can build it, you know, so adapted, but it's basically the same blocks. You're making the same chassis out of the same
blocks. I don't see a problem with it.
No, it's fine. But it's still, I mean, you know, exciting.
It's basically going back to the ages of like when the cars first came out, these ladder chassis.
Yeah.
You just basically have a ladder chassis. You extend it, you make it.
Put whatever body you want on it.
Then you put whatever body you want onto it.
So, get a coach builder, yeah.
You know, people are always going on about electric cars. All the manufacturers are going electric car nuts. Everybody's building one. On the bike side of things, they've been quite quiet, which is weird. I mean, you've got Harley with their Livewire, and you've got this other company called Zero. Well, Yamaha has now filed a patent for a electric motorcycle, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
And to me, that makes a lot of sense.
I was actually thinking about that. So none of the big Jap, Yamaha, Suzuki, Honda, Ducati, and BMW haven't really done anything.
Well, Vespa's done it.
Launched. If you want to spend over 200,000 rand on an electric Vespa. It's very expensive. The last time I checked, I think when they first announced it, it was like high hundreds, 170 odd.
But on a bike, I mean, how much fuel does a bike use?
Nothing.
What is the real point of an electric bike?
There probably isn't much benefit, to be honest.
I think there is. I don't know, it's kind of cool.
Well, they're so efficient as is.
Yeah.
I don't know, but still.
You might as well have a bike that makes
$100 buys me a full tank of gas in my Vespa. And that's infinite. I forget where the gas tank is between fill-ups.
But interesting on the electric car side, I mean, everyone's just going nuts for it. And there was actually an interesting article that one of you posted today with Andrew Frankel talking about all the environmental things. But the interesting thing was that in China, there was a Tesla that exploded.
Yeah, I saw that. And they caught it on a CCTV camera.
What, spontaneously just exploded?
Yeah. Now, it's interesting. So, like, in the Formula One cars, they've got those hybrid systems. The curse, and they are quite dangerous. I mean, when the marshals are going over to the cars and stuff, they have to make sure that those things are really safe in case there's in an accident. That those things, I mean, there's huge amounts of voltage going through it.
Massive.
So, I mean, I think that it's only a matter of time before there are some serious.
I think those batteries are lithium ion, if I'm not mistaken, and I think it's when the lithium and the iron mix or something. They shouldn't mix. And when they do, that you have the combustion. That's why they tell you not to stick batteries in the dustbin.
Or your fingers into the plug hole.
Yeah, that too.
I don't know. See, I mean, we could have just gone hydrogen anyway. It's all going to end up in a big fiery explosion.
Yeah, hydrogen sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Does it?
Yeah. Because it'll be an explosion. At least it's a combustion engine.
Yeah, it'll be proper explosion.
Talking about electric cars, I mean, you can't not talk about it every week. There's always something. Ford has pumped $500 million into a company called Rivian, which is the rival to Tesla.
Where are they from?
They are. So Tesla's Silicon Valley. Rivian, I think, is also...
They're from the States.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's a startup. But the strange thing about Rivian is that they've been very successful in raising capital.
Big time.
But what I don't really understand is what they're offering. So... A lot of big names are spending money on Rivian, but to me it's not actually clear what it is that they're offering yet. So I don't know if it's behind the scenes or...
From my understanding, it's basically they've got this, like a chassis which contains everything, batteries, drivetrain, the whole thing. It's like quite a clever modular approach to electric cars, from my understanding.
Okay.
But, I mean, Amazon.com also pumped in big cash into them.
Huge money coming in.
So, producer Paige just asked me a question. Mm-hmm. Are people buying electric vehicles?
Not here, because they're very expensive.
So, that's not just that, but it's the infrastructure. So, they're buying hybrids here, but they're not buying electric. Are there any all-out electrics? The i3 without
I-Pace.
The iPace.
The iPace, you don't really need infrastructure on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. It's got such a big range. You're not going to do 300 Ks a day.
Yeah, I suppose.
The Nissan Leaf's been available for a while.
Yeah. I see the one every now and then.
Yeah. Sad, lonely Nissan Leaf.
Looks like a
Prius. Ex-chairman had one.
It's not as aerodynamic.
It was quite funny to see him have to leave it somewhere because he ran out of battery. Yeah.
Incredible.
Awful, yeah.
And it was a Nissan. I mean, and like, really, like that thing. It's like...
What's wrong with Nissan?
I'm saying it's about as far from a GTR as you're ever going to get. The Nissan Leaf is probably the most uninspiring car I've ever seen.
I think you're going to find the next GTR is going to have hybridization.
I'm not, no. And funny enough, in that car, I think it completely works. I mean, it's a tech car.
Mm. So basically, everything's just becoming a Prius.
No.
God, this again.
Honestly, this is the most boring subject.
Yeah. But hold on. We were talking about a GTR, and are we going to be discussing that?
We're going to talk about that later.
That's actually a great value car.
What?
A Nissan GTR.
I was looking on Auto Trader, and you can get one starting around 700s.
It's a lot of car.
Just if that thing breaks.
But you've got to find one that hasn't been molested, which is almost impossible.
We're going to be talking about a very fast GTR, a very powerful GTR later on in the show.
Good.
First, we're going to have a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about cars for girls.
Ooh.
Man, this aircon is racist.
For the latest political news
and in-depth discussion and analysis
on events making headlines in South Africa's socio-political space,
join myself, Amil Amro, and my comrades from the Sunday Times Politics Desk for our Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast. You can find new weekly episodes on the Times Live website every Wednesday.
This is not a chef.
Can you please come in?
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Now, a lot of you out there have asked us to do another secondhand car challenge because I think you find it quite entertaining, A, and B, it's actually quite useful because sometimes you find yourself in similar buying scenarios where you need to pick something. So this week on the great Cargumentative secondhand car buying guide, the challenge was 200,000 Rand. You have to go out onto a secondhand car website of your choice and choose a car for your daughter. Now, this is first time car.
Very interesting. So, I mean, the first thing that springs to mind for me is it has to be incredibly safe. Okay. It has to be incredibly cool.
Cool.
Well, do you want it to be cool?
No, I was going to say, it should be incredibly boring.
No.
You don't want to attract unwanted attention to your daughter.
No, the right kind of attention.
But she needs to want to be seen in it. She also needs to want to drive it. It can't be something that she's going to be like.
No, it's not. Come on. Not for my daughter.
See what you mean.
When I was a young...
The car is very important.
When I was a young lady, I wanted was something that would take me from A to B.
So what's our price limit, Tom? What's our price limit? 200,000 Rand.
200,000 Rand.
You got to buy something now.
So your daughter's turning 18 or turning 17. She
it's
needs
the big
car.
Day. She's having her bat mitzvah. Is that right?
No, that's wrong.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
Okay, it's got to be safe.
She's turning 17.
It's got to be reliable.
Yeah.
It's economical.
You can't get a car at 17. You got to wait till you turn 18.
Yeah. Obviously, it's illegal.
So she's 17 with 5 days to go before she turns 18.
Turning 18, you've got to buy her something.
I would let them.
She's going to use it for the end of high school. She's going to roll to varsity in it. It's she's got to want to drive it, I suppose. It can't be something embarrassing.
But we know it's going to mount a couple of pavements.
And also it's going to get whiskey dents.
It's going to get whiskey dents. It's going to get reversed into things.
A lot.
Yeah, there's going to be takeaway packets all over.
I think we should split this.
Mark's closest to this scenario. Yeah. Okay, Mark doesn't have that much time left. Maybe you need to start thinking about it.
And you're going to be following suit, and then you'll be. There are actually a lot of girls that we are going to need cars in this room. And Tom gives us real world examples about how he felt when he was a girl.
Exactly.
But I think we should probably split this discussion into two sides. We should go and say, what do we think we should buy?
Yeah. And what do we think would want?
What do you think they would want?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
So, Mark, you start. What do you think you should buy them?
All right. So, I honestly believe, and this has been debated already.
And I've heard this, and this is legitimately what he thinks. Okay, go.
For this, yeah.
So, I think that first-generation Boxsters
of course.
Are exceptional value.
Why would they not ever pause?
So, the thing is that... A 2.5 Boxster by modern standards is not. It's only hot hatch fast. I mean, they're 200 horsepower. It's 150 kilowatts. So it's not. It's not going to be overly fast.
It's probably just Kia Sportage fast.
Yeah, it probably is only that.
Yeah.
But very, very safe. I mean, it's got traction control,
mid-engine,
airbags, all those things. The beauty of it is that if you go for and there's a friend of ours in the UK picked up a first gen Boxster. For £3,000 now in South Africa, so that's the equivalent of like just around £50,000.
Yeah, it's not possible in this country.
Yeah, you're not going to get that. Yeah.
No, but it's here in South Africa. Realistically, you'll get a proper one for about £120,000.
Yeah, I was going to say 150.
No.
150. You will get the very best one if you're prepared.
180.
To go,
yeah, I think if you're not mileage sensitive, Tom, if you don't mind over 100,000 k's, which you don't, because they're pretty robust cars. Then, yeah, you can get away with 150.
And there's one other thing that you can bring into the equation, which probably will get an absolute mint, is if you're prepared to go for a tip.
Yeah?
If you're prepared to go for a Tiptronic, which is not a great gearbox for the enthusiast.
And only the tip.
Just the tip.
come on. But, yes, I know what you mean, Mark.
It's my head.
It's not for everyone, but it is actually very usable daily.
And
for the varsity run or whatever, it's perfect.
And in all likelihood... It will become the car that like is sort of collectible because it's the first generation Boxster that was ever made. But also, I'll tell you why I'm mentioning it is that when I grew up, and I think you're a similar age, you're also similar, but we grew up with that show Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah.
And there was a high schooler, actually, he passed away recently, and he had a Porsche 356 Speedster.
I remember that.
Was in Riverdale.
Dylan. The name was Dylan.
No, but in real life.
I don't know.
Not Matthew McConaughey. But anyway, don't you think giving a Porsche the first car is kind of not a, you know, I mean, where do you go from there? Where do you go forward, like in terms of aspirations? You're like, if this is your first car.
Oh, he's suggesting a Gen 1. Next car is obviously a Gen 2. Look, 996, 986, look, then a 987.
I have another real world answer to that.
Yeah.
Is I did that when I was at varsity. I traded in my Golf on a 911S, and I know where it led. So, not necessarily to bad places.
Yeah.
But okay. So getting on to what I think.
That's what you think. What would she want?
Okay. Mini Cooper.
You think so?
Yeah. No, no reason. Told me.
Why?
Yeah, we are quite a lot.
Supercharged one?
No, so that's the thing is I would be able to choose because I'd also be able to use a thing. So it would be
like a father and daughter shared project.
JCW.
So the hardest, most uncomfortable one.
Exactly.
Okay.
With a Union Jack on the roof.
Of course.
Yeah, she's specific on that.
Mark, a little bit more time to think about it, maybe.
Yeah, I like the Porsche idea as my choice, but I think I'd probably end up. I don't know. She'd want something probably a bit more practical, back seats, boot space, and I don't know how well a Boxster will ramp pavements. So I would get, I don't know, as much Golf as I could buy for $150,000 or $200,000.
Of course you would.
Yeah, because it's a great car.
But
you buy a DSG, you buy a 1400 TSI. It's economical. It's reliable. It's fun. It's whatever. It's everything.
You don't think they need to learn how to drive a manual? It's last of generation.
No, so get a manual one.
Yeah, good.
Okay, what about? I'm just playing devil's advocate because that's what I do.
Don't say Toyota.
No. But have you thought about Golf hijack risk, Golf theft risk?
I don't know if Golfs are. I think GTIs specifically are prone to that.
Yeah.
And Polos, but not just the entry level kind of Golf. Not that I know of.
Mm.
But obviously that's a factor, yeah.
Yeah.
So if that's a factor, then I don't know. Renault. I like a Renault Clio. I think they're cool. Or a Ford Fiesta. These are all great first cars.
Great.
Well, those would be her choices.
Are you putting a Ford Fiesta in there for less theft risk?
I don't know. Okay, we'll talk about that just now.
A little bit topical this week.
We'll talk about that
just now. Maybe not. Maybe not.
But it's got to be, I think, I'd say a practical hatch would be their choice. And my choice would be as much sports car as I could find for 200 grand. So, yeah, Boxster.
We're all fine Boxster.
We are.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess I'm stop it.
You know you're going to get a Renault, man.
or an Audi.
I really not. I think so. My opinion actually is that city cars these days are actually incredible. What's been happening in the small car game has almost passed us by because we're all so sports car obsessed. But small cars are so good these days. And I think I would go for a VW Up. So it's imported, it's funky, it's youthful, it's got a 3-cylinder engine that sounds like half a Porsche. It's a manual, which I think is important to learn how to drive.
Can you get a brand new one for that price?
You can get a used one.
You can get a very good used
demo
one
for under 200.
Yeah, you can get one.
They come with all the mod cons with
heated seats,
Bluetooth, leather steering wheel, some cruise control. You know, they're nice and safe. They're nice and practical. They're actually really lovely to drive. They feel solid. I'm not sure what you would need more than a VW Up. I really don't. I would honestly consider driving one daily myself.
Yeah, you don't need more than any of us.
Rapidly approaching 40, and I'd be very happy.
This is not about needs. This is about wants.
Yeah, and then I think if a little bit more space was required, I'd still go back to the Fiesta EcoBoost with the twin clutch box. Is honestly one of the best single cars I've ever driven. That's easily less than 200k. That's a nice varsity car. Put your friends in, put a little bit of stuff in the boot, you know. I think it's a good first car. I don't know.
Mm. I want to add one. Porsche Boxster with an electric conversion. Done.
God, where is this coming from now? This is not good consumer advice.
No, it's terrible.
Oh, right, God.
Terrible consumer
advice. Tom, let's talk about your illegitimate daughter and what car you're going to buy her.
So, not that I want kids, but if ever, you know, I had the misfortune and I happen to have a daughter, first car, I mean, I couldn't afford 200,000 unless I extended my...
Imagine you could.
My action radius from...
Just imagine you could, Tom.
From Corlett Drive down to, you know, down to Oxford Road.
Tom, the male prostitute.
So I was shopping more in about the 100,000 rand bracket.
No.
Okay. And so what did you find?
I found something very good. Mm-hmm. Okay. Low mileage. A 2014 Honda Jazz 1.3 Trend.
Okay.
Which is a good car. Japanese, will never break down.
Yep.
She can miss a service, doesn't matter.
I've just fallen asleep.
It's got that very clever seating system.
Mm.
So if she gets into riding or gymnastics and needs to load things up into
like
the back
horses.
Of the car, horses, saddles and things.
You could put an actual horse in it. You could put a pony.
Yeah.
Small one.
So there's that. It's safe. No one wants to steal it. And also it's kind of unattractive. Like a group of guys going out on a jaw, if they see a Honda Jazz, they're probably going to think it's an old person. So they're not going to look inside the car.
I see you're diverting attention.
Yeah.
I don't know where you're going with that, Tom, but I've just had another thought.
Mm.
By the time my daughter's old enough to drive, an Alpha QV Giulia should be 200 grand. So that's what I'll buy.
True. I think it'll be much less
than that.
So can we get a little bit of a view from an independent person? Producer Page, which one would you go for?
She chooses his option.
Thank you very much.
You don't want the Porsche.
Again. I'm so good at this. Thanks, guys.
And the poll is...
Boxster, Honda Jazz, Volkswagen Up.
Or we could run the poll like this. Say, whose child would you like to be?
Yeah, good idea.
Mike's Nadav's, Mark's, or
Tom's.
My Boxster will be electric. So let's separate the two.
Okay, no, that's fair.
Electric,
okay,
so Boxster.
What?
Normal petrol Boxster. We'll do the conversion.
Has your budget suddenly gone up to like 500,000?
No, because I bought the Boxster for 150.
No, he bought it.
I got it for 50 grand conversion.
He bought it for 80 with a 50 grand conversion.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I like the way you think.
Exactly, yeah. Mike. Here stick with me. VW up or his granny's Jazz. Done.
All right, done.
Put it in the poll.
So, guys, and if you have any further suggestions for our 17-year-old precious little treasure who's about to matriculate and needs a ride, what would you choose? Something funky or something safe?
Please don't play this for my daughter when she's 17 and then she comes asking for a Boxster.
Exactly. So there you go, guys. That's some insightful
consumer
advice from the Cargumentative team. We're going to have a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about things that color our world.
Join me, Paul Ash, in a beautiful soundscape as we explore the world in the Sunday Times Travel Podcast. Find it at sundaytimes.co.za.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, in this segment, we're going to chat about car colors because, you know, aside from engines and gearbox choices, the most important thing when it comes to choosing a car is your color. In the 90s, teal was big. In the 2000s,
In the 60s, it was pastel colors.
60s and 70s.
60s and 70s.
Pastel, yeah.
Oh, man, I love pastel.
Pastel colors, yeah. It also sounds nice. 70s got a bit brighter,
I think.
No, there was also some metallic browns.
Metallics were like the 80s. Everything had to be a metallic.
Mm.
Yeah, and gold, metallic gold.
Also, I love a good metallic gold.
Me too. It's awesome.
Color coding was big in the 80s, eh?
Or was it? Because remember, like, you used to get two-tone cars as well.
I remember my French white Porsche came with white wheels. Terrible.
Amazing.
Terrible.
What an amazing thing.
Your 3.2 Carrera had white wheels, and
from
you
the
changed
factory,
it.
And he changed it.
I didn't change them. They came with black, and that's the way they're staying.
No, what?
White wheels and a wing.
What a mistake.
Yeah, it came.
So what's a good color now? What's the popular choices now?
Well, let's just first go back like through the eras. I mean, there were some amazing cars from when we grew up, like a gunmetal Golf GTR. That was
my
beautiful.
First car.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's
beautiful.
And I mean, even the name, gunmetal gold, gunmetal gray. Gunmetal gray, just
good color.
Was a good color. Hides dirt well. Looked mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this is what we're saying, is that certain colors, They've got practical advantages. They've got emotive qualities. I mean, a color's not just. But you look around you now, and I don't know. I was driving down the road the other day, and you look around you, and if you stop for a moment to consider what's around you, everything's white or silver.
Well, silver was a distinctly early 2000s to mid 2000s color. Everything was silver.
I think silver and white are like. They're just that bland, and everyone.
So why do we run out of imagination?
Offensive.
Is it about resale? Is it then?
So it's resale, and I think white is good in our summer heat.
Okay.
So
reflective.
Although I have been to European countries where all of them are black.
Yes.
For whatever reason, it looks better.
White is by far the most. I mean, I've got some stats here, courtesy Haynes. You know Haynes that make the manuals for cars. When you under the bonnet tinkering and want to know where things go. Africa, 40% of cars white. Europe, 29%. But that's still like bulk of cars sold.
Yeah.
You know? America white, South America white. It's just all white.
So what is it? I mean, what's happening? So now, the thing is, we're perpetuating this kind of white-silver thing. Because if we worry about resale, then the people who are buying them are also buying more white. And so it just keeps happening. It's not going to get any better. What happened to some color?
I think there's been a resurgence. I think starting with the hot hatches in and I'm going to take away like some of the exotics, like Lambos have always been silly colors. Yeah. And I mean everything from the purple SE30 Diablos and a lot of orange ones and green ones, and that's really cool. But I think when the hot hatches started in the early 2000s, so like the Focus RS that I posted recently in the green, I think they started getting a little bit more adventurous in terms of colors. So if you go and look now, guys, you quite often see like an orange car. And I mean, 10 years ago, no one would dream, or 15 years ago, would never dream of having an orange car.
Well, I remember when they launched the
Focus ST.
No. The 991.1 GT3 RS. They launched it in lava purple.
No, ultraviolet.
Ultraviolet. Yeah. Those two colors are great.
Fantastic colors.
You see, I kind of like that pink. I mean, I like pink ultraviolet-y colors like that. Also like yellow cars very much.
Pink.
Yeah, pink. Like that, you know, 964 RS.
Ruby stone red.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, to all intents and purposes, it was basically pink. It was like Lumo fluorescent pink.
It looks okay. Pink.
It's an amazing color. Yeah. Incredible.
You and I were talking about it yesterday. Mm-hmm. 997 GT3 RS. Black with orange, or orange with black?
Absolutely. Yeah, or silver with orange.
No, blue with orange. Sort of,
blue. So all of those orange.
Orange anyway, rocks.
So here's a question for you guys about paint. So when a new car is launched, you know, there's often like, you know, there's lots of camouflage these days, and you see spy shots, and eventually the official pictures come out, and car people like all of us, and presumably all of our listeners, wait for those first official press shots to come out, and they splashed all over the internet and in all the publications, and you often see the same images.
That's right,
because they were handed out by the press.
It's the launch color.
So that's called the launch color, or in other terms, it's called the communication color. And the marketing departments, I think, spend a lot of time deciding what car color that launch car is going to be. Yeah. So. Question to you is, looking forward, is it important or is there value in the communication color? So it's called the communication color. And so launch
not like
today,
993 Turbo Arena Red.
Yes.
Well, exactly. I think there is because, I mean, you know,
Cayman
press releases all the time and stuff comes in and you think, why did they choose to launch this car in this color? Like, it doesn't really, you know, especially the reds and the oranges, because they don't look good on your computer screen.
They don't. Yeah,
as we found out before, like, you get that compression. It just looks muddy and not very nice.
A lot of thought goes into that color. Now, the question is, is there value in buying the communication color?
I think the car looks best in those colors normally.
Does it?
Personally,
in what? Reds?
No, in the launch color. I think a lot of thought has gone into it. I think they look at the shape of the car and the design of the car, and they tried in different colors, and they got a whole lot of people that look at it and say that works with that car.
So I'll give you an example. Roughly 8 years ago, the Cayman R was launched. 987 generation Porsche Cayman R was launched in Peridot green. I'll never forget it. It's like a bright lime green.
Yeah,
beautiful. And my opinion is that in 10 years' time, again, when the Cayman becomes collectible, people will be looking specifically for the communication color.
I agree.
Color.
Yeah. You know, so I think that's a good point.
There was that E36
Phoenix Yellow.
Phoenix Yellow.
Yeah. That was a cool color.
E46.
I love
E46. No, I'm talking about the Dakar Yellow.
The E36 Phoenix was terrible.
Why not?
No, not as good. The Dakar Yellow is cool. Flat.
And what's wrong with blue cars? Where's the blue cars? Cars sometimes look good in blue.
Yeah, it's just because you love Renaults so much.
Like the Ford. That's actually true. They had those flat blues, like that French racing blue, and that
I love a blue
green color. It was awesome.
I had an Alfa 145 in blue.
Come on, guys. Let's all get more inventive.
But I think that actually we're living in an interesting time now, because before, you used to buy your car, you were married to the color. Now, there are options. So, like, obviously, they also, with everything, there's a potential negative that comes with it, because when you, and I'm talking about wraps, you've got the ability to really make your car look terrible. I mean, everything from metallic all the way through to velvet. And I think you just have to hang around London and you'll see pretty much all of the above. But there are friends of mine overseas, and the one guy in particular, he's got a Ferrari Dino 246, I think I may have mentioned it, but his car is silver. It's a very rare car, and it's a beautiful, beautiful car, but he just wants a color change. So he's going for this most beautiful green. He's doing it properly, taking out all the glass, all the rubbers, and his car's going to be green, and I think it's going to be amazing. Now, cool thing with that is you don't mess around with the originality of the car. But if you want to do it every 2-3 years, you can almost have a new car, and
it protects your paint as well.
So it protects the original paint.
Yeah.
It needs a good polish and a little bit of work afterwards, but it does. So it means it doesn't detract from the original. And then, and people are doing amazing jobs these days. So that's the thing. Like, as you said, wraps can have an extreme sort of chrome mirrored finish, or some people are putting cars together that almost look factory in spite of the fact that it's just a wrap. Changing the color of a car is barely noticeable. It's amazing what's happening.
So there's a new product out in the UK where they put something on your paint, so that your original paint of your car, and then they spray actual paint over that layer, and that makes that paint layer peelable.
Sure.
So the application is not a wrap. You know, they've got to like heat shrink and they have to
cut and
Now they do treat it like a normal spray job, so it goes on smoother and easier, maybe more efficiently, and then you can just peel it off. So I mean, your car color that the color you buy it in doesn't even matter. You can alter it.
So some advice? The Diablo, I mean, it's in a very demure silver, which actually, because it's such an outrageous color,
I think you should go yellow.
It actually works.
Yellow.
How much of a factor is...
What about the purple, that the same as it was in the Jamiroquai video?
Oh, the Jota purple.
Mm. Or pink, just to be ironic, you know?
It's a very special color. I don't know if it's right to paint a VT in the Jota color. That almost feels sacrilegious.
It would have been optional on the VT.
I think you should do it, Mark. Absolutely do it.
Something crazy.
I've seen a deep blue metallic Diablo VT, and my God, was it beautiful.
Yeah, there's one in South Africa. Actually.
That's the one.
Yeah.
So maybe, what about
I don't think,
that?
Yeah, it's an SUV.
I said, what's the purple color called?
I'm not sure, but
do it in that color.
Do it.
Take the windscreen out as well.
Whatever.
Take my windscreen out. Just buy everything. I'll do my Daihatsu as well.
And then, and what do you think about this whole, so then, all right. So
current trends.
Okay.
Is that where you're going?
I was, I think.
You're going to go there.
But you can go there.
I want to go there. Grays.
Mm-hmm.
Like battleship grays.
There's this whole new palette of grays. I mean, Honda has one on their Type R. Mm. Audi with Nardo gray. Porsche's got their Crayon, which is kind of like a lighter gray. Everyone's got...
VW call it Uranus gray.
Oh, really?
They do.
Beg your pardon?
That's what they call it. It's a planet.
Bleaching required.
There's a...
They're terrible. I hate those. Actually, the Porsche color, which is Nardo, is not flat. It's metallic.
It's Audi.
What's the Porsche color?
Crayon.
No,
yes, it is.
There's a metallic grey. I don't know what the name of it is. It's not grey.
But also, there's a non-metallic one, I think, because there's a Panamera Gran Turismo.
Yes, and that's
in that colour.
That's the same
one.
That
is one of the coolest looking cars.
And it looks flat, but it's actually metallic.
Yeah. Really,
really cool.
Sure. Yeah.
So you guys like the grey? Because I personally love the greys. I think it's awesome.
Grey. I do as well.
On a DB, on a Superleggera, what the DBS Superleggera? Beautiful.
Looks great.
But this brings up a perfect example of actually what I was getting at is, so there's colours that become trendy for a period of time.
Mm.
And so greys are cool now, and then they kind of fade away. But now, if you fast forward 10 years, that color really dates the car.
Yeah.
It's like, it quite literally dates it to a particular year almost, where that was trendy.
Like a teal RAV4 from 1995.
Like a lime green Lamborghini Miura.
That's a good one.
I always think of 1998 BMW bottle green.
Last question. What's the view on changing just one body panel color? So like on the bonnet.
That will look like you've had an accident and haven't bothered to fix it.
It depends on the car. Is it acceptable? It depends on the car.
No, it's
an old 911. It's fine.
No, it isn't.
It is.
Anything that Magnus Walker owns, you've got full license.
It has to have a black bonnet. Yeah,
part of it pink or white or blue or whatever it is.
It just looks like you haven't bothered to paint it properly. Bad idea.
I think it's interesting. I think we need a little bit more color palette on the roads.
What is that VW called? The Harlequin.
The Harlequin edition, remember that?
Oh, Every panel was a different color.
That's right.
It's quite a clever way. Yeah. And like if you're poor and you don't have a lot of money.
It's amazing. They only made like 20 of them, but there are 100 now on the road.
Exactly. They've been breeding.
Exactly.
Well, that's basically car colors. Guys, if you've got a favorite color or would like to suggest cars in certain colors which you think are cool, hit us up on social media. It's at @cargumentative. On Instagram, or hashtag us Cargumentative, and our producer page will pick it up somewhere on the digital ethernet.
And if there's enough comeback, Tommy's really going to consider wrapping the materia to look like a dog.
Actually, when I got the materia, I wanted to actually make it like that sort of Desert Storm, like brown color, like be quite cool. But then the quote was too much.
Far too aggressive for such a feminine car.
You think so?
Yeah.
I should have gone with Paris Hilton pink.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. I'll do that next time.
Debate for another day.
Guys, we're going to take another break.
Young people are making their mark. Get up.
Tune into the Sebenza Live Behind the Hustle podcast every Tuesday to find out more about what fascinating careers are out there. You can find us on the Sowetan Live website,
or you can follow us on Twitter on Sebenza Live.
Sebenza boy.
Sebenza girl.
Sebenza.
Yavamdana.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, this is the segment that you've all been holding on for.
Really?
Mark. Really.
Well, you guys love GTRs and fast things. And
we like,
Mike,
yeah, we
loves
do.
Cars.
If we had to choose a Japanese car, and Nissan GTR wouldn't be the one. That's a great Japanese car.
Well, then you should make your way down to the annual Jaguar Simoli Hill Climb.
Oh, wow. What have they got there, Thomas?
They've got the mother of all GTRs. I don't know. Well, I think you have seen, because I sent you the photographs.
I have.
What's that? Franco Scribanti, who races in extreme supercars and used to race in historics with me. He has got this ridiculous-looking Nissan GTR. It's a bespoke hill climb car, and it does look like a snowplow.
Yeah, I mean
so it's got this wing on the front. It looks like a bulldozer.
It looks like a little bit modeled on those Pikes Peak cars. So Pikes Peak is a very, very old race that's held at very high altitude in America, and I mean, it's exceptionally dangerous. There are lots of cliffs and things like that. But the cars there, they have these snowplow wings on the front that wouldn't be a miss on a...
I mean, that's ridiculous.
On a Formula One car. No, it is. In fact, that car, you can't even see really whether it's the front or the back.
It looks
like a Formula One wing has been strapped to the front and to the back.
If he spins, you can just pop it into reverse and carry on up the hill. It'll be exactly the same.
So I think we need to describe to everyone exactly how that looks, Tom. So,
well, have a look at our Instagram page, because we will post a picture of it.
It looks like it's got a biplane wing on the front of the car. So
and on the back.
Let's talk about the front. The front's the controversial part. So it's got a very big front spoiler.
It looks like a 70s. If you can imagine a 70s Formula One car, the rear wing on a 70s F1 car, those huge, big, chunky wings. Somebody took one of those off because they had it lying around and thought, I can't afford to go out to a body shop and buy a new one. So I'll just take this old Formula One car wing and stick it on the front of my GTR to make downforce.
But the position on the front is what we're talking about. Yeah. So there's one at the bottom and one a bit higher up where the badge would go on the Nissan GTR, on the bonnet.
So
you line with the bonnet.
You've got
top of the bonnet.
So you've got the traditional splitter on the bottom, and then attached to that is this Formula One style wing.
So what does this do, Tom? It just adds massive downforce on the front.
A huge amount of downforce on the front. Then at the back, you've got an equally big wing. And then below that, you've got like this rear diffuser, which also helps with...
Sucks
the flow under the car, just sucking down. So it's just...
So you can go around corners without braking, really.
One would assume
have you driven the course?
I have, yeah.
Okay, so I mean, the last year the winner was in a purpose-built hill climb car that was a single seater. The lap record around 35 odd seconds.
Yeah, so basically
the best GTR last year was 39 seconds.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, they're sort of three main classes here. You've got single seaters, which is always the fastest car. So last year there was a car called a Ghoul GR55.
Okay.
And that roared up the hill in 35 seconds.
Wow.
Okay, that's fast.
Very.
And is there any lift in that? I mean, would you take every corner flat, or do you actually have to brake for some of those corners?
Well, in the cars I drive, I think I braked once, just a little bit, but not heavily. You just come, and then because you go up a long hill, and up the top there, you just brake a little bit to just help turn the car in.
Okay.
And then there's an S's up there, but you don't really have to come off.
Really?
Okay, so in these...
I mean, I was in a Jaguar, like an XE.
So you're doing this whole hill climb and braking once.
So
well, in the car I was driving.
Well,
I
these
mean,
cars
I don't know
might
how it is.
Not actually. That's the thing I'm trying to work out here, because they might have so much downforce that they can basically take it flat. I mean, then I suppose it just comes down to your line being right and not making any silly mistakes.
But you want to talk about horsepower, because also, I mean, this monster of a car has got, well, claimed. They're claiming just under 1,200 kilowatts.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, but on these GTRs, there's a place in Joburg that does them up to 2,000 horsepower.
What's standard kilowatts on a GTR?
Sure enough.
I think it's just under 400.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's somewhere around there. It's somewhere around there.
Yeah, they were like 350.
355.
So yeah.
I mean, that is a huge
amount. So what does that equate to in horsepower? Probably like 500.
Yeah. 500.
So that's 1,200 kilowatts.
Exactly. Mm. And they say that it's capable of, because Jalopnik, it ended up on Jalopnik, which is a big American car site.
Of course it did.
It's capable to go up to 2,200 horsepower.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just ridiculous amounts
and
of power.
Yeah, I mean, they make those here in South Africa. I mean, those things have got bullet blocks and things like that. But it's going to be fascinating. I mean, I can't wait. To be honest, it's not my cup of tea in terms of the way it looks, but at least you've got something that's just completely off the wall that's going to go out there and try and win it. And
absolutely.
It's going to be two completely different approaches to the same hill. So you're going to have a single-seater that probably weighs best part of like 400 kilos with probably moderate power, lots and lots of downforce, handles well. This thing is going to be like a sledgehammer and just trying to use physics, aerodynamics to try and get this thing to stick to the ground.
So what other motorsport is there where there's no limits, no boundaries? This is probably the only one left.
No, probably Topfield Dragster. I mean, like there.
Yeah, okay, but that's straight line. I'm talking about actual handling and aero and power. Hill climbs are where it is.
Yeah, probably. Mm.
Didn't Sebastian Loeb hold the record for up the
Pikes Peak? Yeah, I think he did, yeah.
In a Renault?
No, it was a Citroen.
Was it a Citroen?
I think so, yeah.
A
Peugeot.
It was French,
yeah.
Like him.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a fantastic video of, I think it's called Cloud Dance. It was one of the rally guys in a Group B type rally car
back
in the 80s.
Yeah.
And you watch it because a lot of it's gravel section.
Not anymore.
Yeah, now it's tarred.
Now it's tarred.
Back in the day. Yeah. And when you look at this, you actually think to yourself, cannot believe these guys are going and driving like this. Like when you fall off there, you fall a long way.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where he actually takes his hand off the wheel to shield the sun.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right.
Wrestling this group.
What's it called? Cloud Dance.
I think so. We'll look for it and we'll put it on.
I think this is fantastic, and I think if they keep pushing the envelope and keep developing, this is brilliant.
But
we should salute him for doing this.
Look, it's going to be very interesting to see how much all this. I mean, because this obviously costs.
Yeah, but
a crate load of cash, and I want to see how much of an advantage it gives him over last year's GTR, which had 950 kilowatts. That did the hill climb in 39.463.
Was it also, he drove the Lola? What did he drive?
You know, the Chevron.
The Chevron. Sorry. But that was in the classic days. So I'm talking about.
So he didn't drive the GTR last year?
No.
But he's driving this year?
He's driving the GTR this year. But last year's GTR did a 39.4. Okay,
well, let's see.
Now, to put that into context, a fast road car like a Jaguar F-Type SVR will do that run in 44.9 seconds. An Exige with a 2.4 turbocharged Honda engine with 560 kilowatts will do it in 39.9 seconds. So it's very interesting to see just how much you need to spend, and how much R&D needs to go into the car to scrape away.
So we'll report back on that. I mean, I'd estimate it's going to be worth 2 seconds. I don't think it's going to get down to 35.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think we should have a bet. Let's have a argumentative bet here, and the guy closest to what Franco.
So what was the previous record? The GTR 34.
Last year's 35. No. Last year's GTR did it in 39.4.
Oh, 39.4.
So the winner was 35.
So I say this GTR 35 as well.
You think 35?
Mm.
So you think it's going to be as fast as a single seat?
4 seconds.
4 seconds.
Well, why wouldn't it be as fast? It's got all the downforce.
Yeah,
and it's got the power.
I'm not sure that downforce is going to help.
Well, let's see.
Let's see. I mean, I think it's going to be 37 dead.
So
yeah, I was also going to say 37.
Okay, let's take everyone's, and then I want to tell you an interesting point. What do you say?
Nadav wants to add something.
I haven't said much, but I realize that, and I want to not, you know, full respect to Franco Scrabante and company for going all out and doing something as controversial as this thing looks, and you know, taking making a kind of a local version of a real Pike's Peak car. I mean, it's nice to bring that kind of expertise and kind of risk to South Africa. Absolutely. It's cool. I just can't help thinking that it's an engineering mistake. So in other words, a little bit like a Boeing 787-8 MAX. Yeah,
737-8 MAX.
The anti-stall. Where you fix something, yeah. where something's broken, you know, essentially yeah. broken, and you fix it with something else. Oh, you're not starting out with the wrong point. So, I mean, yeah. yeah, it's all in good fun taking a GTR and putting a giant crate on the front to make it try and stick to the road. But I just think that that's not the way... You know, all this money is going down this direction. That's probably the wrong engineering solution. In the end, the fastest thing up the hill is going to be the lightest, most power with power to weight ratio.
Yeah.
And so I'm not really sure that this is the right way to go. But
yep. it's going to be interesting.
If I had to put it out there, it's going to be faster than last year's GTR. Yep. So I'm going to say 36.5.
Sure. Okay. 36.5.
It's not going to beat the. It's not going to beat last year's fastest time. And I think this year's fastest time will be faster than last year's fastest time.
Interesting. So do you know any other entrants? Or is that the only one that's really been spoken about?
That's the only one that's really been spoken about, yeah.
So my interesting point was when the Bugatti Veyron came out, it was 1,000 horsepower. Is that right?
1,001?
1,001 horsepower. Yeah. And what they said was that it needed, like, I don't know, 500 horsepower to get up to 300 k's an hour, and another 500 horsepower to do another 100 kilometers an hour, because the air resistance just compounds.
Yeah, it's exponential. Yeah,
exactly. So it's the same thing with that. You have to put so much more power, so much more aero to go 2/10 faster.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be great to watch. I mean, I think we're hoping everyone's safe, but... Let's see these guys go and hammer up the hill. One day we're going to have to do a cogumentative entrant.
I absolutely believe we should, and I think it should be a purple Lamborghini without a windscreen.
We can do it on the classic day, on Classic Friday, because there's Classic Friday, and then you get the modern cars on the Saturday.
Oh, that'll be cool.
You're a classic.
Let's aim to do it next year. I think we might have said this last year, if we were here. Mm. But let's aim to do this next year.
Yep.
And what car, though? I know that. You can do it in your
4C.
Your 993 2.7 Carrera.
Not mine.
Yeah? And then we can colour it in like awesome mild 7 Shell livery.
Yeah.
Or pink cogumentative livery.
Pink cogumentative.
Yeah.
So I need your time though, hey, before we wrap this up.
No, what I said 36. Yeah.
No, I think you said 35.
Did I say 35?
Yeah, 35.
Mark says 35. Nadav said 36.5, and you said 37.
37 dead.
Me too. 37
also.
Dead.
And just before we close, and we've got a little bit of event that we're going to be doing an outside broadcast next week. I'm quite excited. We've got these Monster Jam cars coming. Tom and I are definitely going to be there. We're going to have to see if the other two join.
Yeah.
I'm hoping they let us sit in the cars.
Monster Jam, baby.
Mark, they're going to let us drive the cars.
I'm hoping.
You're just going to work your charm.
Those things look frightening.
You just got to hope, yeah. No, you'll get it done.
I do want to hear them start.
1,500 horsepower.
Really?
Ethanol.
Yes, but each wheel weighs the same as Nadav's T.
Do some of them have twin engines? No. Oh, some of them are actually diesel.
No.
Yeah, they are.
They're not.
Tom,
I'm not.
Google it.
I did some a whole article diesel. On it. They run Chevy V8 supercharged. Okay. Methanol.
Okay, but that's there's it. One diesel one.
Maybe like years ago.
It'll be fun.
It's going to be awesome. Do you know that they can do 0 to 100 in like 3 seconds? Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
For a car that weighs 4.5 tons.
4.5 tons?
4.5 tons.
Yeah.
Okay, that's incredible.
Monster Jam is full of amazing figures, but guys, we're going to get into that next week.
Why is Paige showing us fingers? She's showing six fingers. What does that mean?
Six brides for six brothers.
Yes.
Does she mean that she's trying to say that time is up? Is that what you're trying to say, Paige?
Is that the time for tequila? Because I'm in.
Six
tequila
shots. Time. Yes, please. Yeah. Six are the best.
She's trying to say it's hammer time.
Guys, thanks again for joining me in studio.
Thanks for having us, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
And, Mike, I'm looking forward to our first... Is it our first external broadcast?
Second one. We also did the Binder one.
Brad Binder.
Oh, yes, we did, yeah.
To our three listeners, we hope you join us again next week.
Exactly. Love you, Mom. Thanks for tuning in so diligently. And we'll catch you again next week for another episode of Cogumentative.
Ciao.
Bye.